It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
I remember our teacher coming and telling us, oh, we've got Man City scouts coming. And I ended up signing for them. Was there till like 10, 11.
Yeah.
And then signed for West Ham.
And since then, you've been at Dagenham, Dartford, Faversham Town. Was it tough when clubs are letting you go?
The pressure started kicking in, really.
Did it?
Like, the 20s, I just didn't want to wake up.
Drinking full bottles of Hennessy?
Full bottles of Hennessy, yeah. But then one of my friends rang me and was like, look, I'm with this agency that works at schools. Come, trust me, like, it's a special needs school, like, it's sick. And I changed as a person working at that place.
So how did Love Island come about?
They was kind of messaging me on Instagram. I was like, there's no way. I didn't really like Love Islanders back then, but yeah. I didn't know what I wanted to do. All I remember thinking was, I just want to get paid for being me. Let's just try Love Island.
What were your emotions going
into the villa?
Yeah, and you were
in,
you know,
myself.
But you got to the final, didn't you?
Yeah, I got to the final.
Do you think you should have won it?
Oh, 100% should have won that, sure.
Did you find love when you were in there, would you say? Welcome back to another episode of Inside the Industry Unfiltered with myself, Adam Smith. Delighted to welcome this man on the podcast, a man of many talents. Footballer from Love Island, entertainer, dabbling into music as well now. Yeah. Tyreek Hyde. Ty, thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you, man.
Lot to get into today. As I said, I'm intrigued to find out sort of where your passion is and where your career is going. But I think it's only right that we start at the beginning in your sort of childhood. So tell us about growing up.
So yeah, obviously growing up, my dad was a footballer, professional. So he was in a Premier League for I think one or two seasons, not really quite sure. Don't quote me on that. And also Championship. So just mainly in around there, them sort of teams. And yeah, I had a good childhood, man. Obviously, as you can imagine, if your dad's a pro footballer, you have a decent childhood. You know
not
what I'm
bad.
Saying? So yeah, I come from a good background, good family. And yeah, I was pretty privileged in that sense.
Yeah, your dad is, for those who are unaware, Micah Hyde, who obviously played for Burnley, for Watford, played in the Premier League as well. Full Jamaican international as well, wasn't he? So give us an insight into what's that like. I imagine that there's a lot of positives that come with that, but there are challenges as well, because I was looking at his bio and he did move about quite a bit. Yeah. So were you constantly moving as a kid, households?
Yeah, we obviously was born in London, me and my brother.
Yeah.
So he was born in London in Redbridge.
Yeah.
And that's where we lived whilst my dad was obviously playing for Watford. And then, you know, when you're a professional footballer in the football industry, as you know, you can just move teams anytime.
Yeah.
So I remember one day my dad just coming home and saying, look, we've got to go move to Burnley.
What, from London?
From London, yeah. So we've moved up to Manchester. So yeah, he took me, my mum, my brother all up to Manchester. And I remember just being upset because I was thinking, we're driving for hours here. Like,
yeah.
What's going on? Like,
how old were you then at that time?
I was about 7.
Wow.
Eight. Yeah, my brother was 2 years younger than me, so he must have been about 5. So
wow.
He moved us all up there in Manchester. But do you know what? When I did get to Manchester, I loved it.
Did you?
Do you know what? I do miss it now. Even though I was young,
yeah,
I proper do miss Manchester, man. I proper have like fond memories and vivid memories of living there. Like, I feel like it was just a whole different place compared to London.
Yeah, really, I know what you mean by that. Different vibe, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a different vibe. Like, I feel like everyone's a lot more like friendlier. Yeah. It was more like a community, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
in London, I thought everyone's a bit of a snob, you know what I'm saying?
When you get on the tube sometimes, it's manic, isn't it?
Yeah, do you know what I'm
saying? People just like want to get, I know what you're saying. Mm. Two great cities for a night out though, to be fair.
Yeah.
Different vibe, but different cities. Your dad's quite young as well, isn't he? He had you and your brother quite young. So do you remember did you live through his career? You remember his moments?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, I was a bit too young to remember the Watford days.
Yeah.
So obviously, but when he went to Burnley, I literally lived and breathed football as a young
kid.
Like, I literally loved it. Like, for example, like I'd go watch my dad on a Saturday at Burnley at Turf Moor, and then I'll go home and just replicate everything I saw in the garden. Like, and I'll be out there for hours, like smashing the ball against the wall. My brother weren't really into it as much as I was, to be fair. So I literally used to just, like, I'd pass the ball here, then run over there, pretend to be another player, then pass it back. Like, it was mad. And then my mum and dad had to, like, drag me in. Like, I literally couldn't stop me from kicking a ball back then in them days.
What was it like having your dad? You obviously said the challenging part was moving house and stuff like that, but the perks of having a dad who was playing Premier League football, Championship football, was it? I mean, going out for meals and stuff, was he constantly getting recognised? Did you sort of understand what was going on at that young age and that it wasn't sort of just a dad with a normal job, so to speak.
You know what? No one's really ever asked me that question, you know, about if like how I felt like people recognize. I don't think I even noticed people recognizing him.
Really?
So my dad's not really like that way inclined. Like, he's genuinely not. He's like proper humble. Like, I remember when we was growing up, I'd even ask him like, can dad tell me what it's like? Tell me what it's like. And like, he'd tell me a little bit, but he won't really go into it too tough. You know what I'm saying? I feel like my dad's someone who's really like, he wanted me and my brother to really like live our own lives. You know what I mean? Like, he never really pressured us to play football from early. I just wanted to really do it. And like, my brother, like I said, my brother weren't really too fond of it. He just let us do what we want, really. Let us have freedom. But obviously, like I said, when your dad's a pro footballer, there is perks, you know what I'm saying? When I'm going, I get to watch football matches live and watch my dad every week. Do you know what I'm saying? So it is obviously a sick situation. And back then, I always knew that my mum and dad always made it clear to me early that, like you are privileged. You know what I mean? Like, you do live a privileged life compared to others. So I never really was never one to grow up and like look down on others or anything like that. You know what I mean? So obviously I know my mum and dad both come from like very, very humble beginnings themselves. So they raised us, no matter what, like, how well my dad was doing, that like, to be grounded and humble. And
that's class. So even though you had a lot or more than others, it was like very humbling. And your love for football didn't stem with your dad being super competitive and forcing you out in the garden. It was just because you were watching him, you wanted to emulate what he did.
Literally. My dad never once would say, go practice. It's only when I've said like, dad, I want to be a footballer.
Yeah.
When I've actually come out and he saw that I was hungry doing the stuff myself, that's when he'd come in and step in and say like, cool, do this, do that, and give it advice. But he never really pressured any of us. No, he didn't. He didn't pressure any of us.
I love that. Yeah. When he finished playing football, how did you react then? Were you sort of gutted that part of the journey was over? Because it sounds like you absolutely loved going to watch him play.
I used to love it. Obviously, you know, when I was young and he was playing at Burnley, and like even Peterborough, you know, it's like Championship, League One and that. And then obviously as I started getting older, he got older in age. So his career started declining a bit. Then I remember going to like Barnet and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, like, this ain't quite the same. You know what I'm saying?
It's not the same as Watford.
Yeah,
it's
not the same as Watford and Burnley. But
no disrespect to Barnet.
Yeah, no disrespect to Watford. Because obviously they're still good teams, good clubs. But yeah, I just remember thinking, oh, like, he's on his way out here. Do you know what I'm saying? And well, it was always just used to love going.
I suppose that's the tough thing about football. Obviously, it's the dream job for a lot of people. But you do retire at a young age, don't you? Some people retire early 30s when a lot of people's careers are getting started. So that must be, I imagine for your whole family, a difficult adaption period.
I feel like I never really spoke to my dad about how he adapted from playing to now. Obviously he coaches now.
He's at QPR, right?
He's at QPR, he coaches at QPR. So I never really asked him about how did he adapt, but I just remember we were seeing a lot more of him, basically. That's what I remember. We just used to see a lot more of him. Because obviously when you're playing at football, you go training every single day when you're a pro footballer, you know what I'm saying? I remember him just being in the house a bit more, really.
That must have been nice things. I imagine things like Christmas and holidays, and there are sacrifices footballers have to make. There must have been times where he might have missed a school performance you've done or social with your mates or something because he's playing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember there was a couple Christmases where we didn't spend with my dad because obviously he was traveling away. So away games on, you know, Boxing Day football, how big that is.
Yeah.
So he was traveling Christmas Day and stuff like that. So I remember it would just be my mum and my nan and my granddad and stuff like that. So I remember he missed it. So I can imagine that was quite hard for him to be fair as well, but I never really thought, where's dad, to be fair.
Fair enough, just opening your toys.
You know, we was kind of used to it, you know what I'm saying? On the Saturday, we wake up, dad's not there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's going to play football.
I'm gutted, hang on a minute, it's getting electric.
You've got other things to take your mind off.
Yeah, I'll get that, fair play. So how did your journey into football start then? What sort of age did you realise you had a bit? Because obviously we're going to talk about semi-pro, non-league level that you played. I played in a charity game with you recently. You clearly got a lot in your locker. So when did you start properly playing?
Properly playing football about 8 years old, I'd probably say. It's actually funny because when obviously, we was in Manchester and I remember Manchester City, like scouts and like the scouts that so up north, you got obviously Man City, Man U, Blackburn, Bolton, all them teams.
Yeah,
I remember one day our teacher would just tell us, we was in primary school, so young school. Teacher would come in and tell us, oh, we got Man City scouts coming that during lunchtime or something like that. Like, they literally just come to the school, and then they'll throw cones out. And we was literally on our school uniforms, like little boys, and I'd like dribble through the cones and then shoot at the end and stuff like that. And I remember we was all doing it. And I remember like, hang on a sec, like, I'm actually better than a couple of the boys here. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I actually got a bit.
So you realised you had a bit.
I had a bit. Yeah, and then obviously the Man City sent me a letter through my door. And basically, like, we'd like to invite you down to the training ground, like the academy training ground, to come and like play with the actual squad, the players that signed. So like basically a trial.
Yeah.
But so I've got scouted from my uniform in school with a couple other boys.
Yeah.
I still talk to a couple of them now, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually mad. And then come down and trial. So I remember my mum used to take me. See, my dad was training and stuff like that. Sometimes my dad would take me. And then I remember just training with them. Like, they literally just had 11-a-side game one time. It was I always remember this. I don't know why, because back in the day, Man City weren't really Man City today. Like, you know what I'm saying? So they was like a mid-table Prem team and that. Yeah. And I remember just one team was wearing a home kit. So the signed players was wearing a home kit and the trialists was wearing the away kit. And it was you remember the Man City kit, yeah? With a red and the red and black.
Red and black.
The red and black. It was that kit. So I was wearing that kit. And then we were just playing against
Robbie Fowler.
What a player, by the way.
Yeah.
And then I remember just playing against them in that kit. And then I remember I just had a mad game. Like, I played sick. Then literally they just wanted to sign me from there. But also at the same time as that happened, Blackburn, I was also on trial at Blackburn at the same time. So they both wanted to sign me. So it was Man City and Blackburn. And I remember just always thinking, because back then it's funny because I was like, I want to go to Blackburn, because Blackburn's facilities was actually brazy, like very, very good compared to Manchester City.
It's mad, like the younger people listening to this will go, what, Blackburn, Man City?
Yeah,
there was
mad.
A time back then when there wasn't a lot of difference in terms of the footballing giants of stature of the clubs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's actually mad to see how far Man City have come now, isn't it? It's crazy. When I was growing up, like we said. And then I wanted to go to Blackburn. My dad was like, nah. My dad always told me, no, go to Man City. And then I ended up signing for Man City. But then everything took a U-turn because then my dad had to move club again.
Yeah.
So this time I think he was having some problems with the manager at Burnley at the time and that.
But
fun fact about him, my dad captained every team he played for.
Did he? Yeah, every single team? I didn't know that.
He captained at some point, which is quite remarkable, really.
That is incredible, yeah.
He reminded me that the other day. I didn't really know it. He just told me.
He rang you before he came to the pod.
And then, he had to move club again. So he moved to Peterborough.
Yeah.
So then he's talking.
So from Burnley to Peter, that's a long journey. So you're now moving house as a family.
But bearing in mind, obviously, I've got my friends now.
Yeah.
I've just signed for Man City. I'm thinking, I'm really doing my
pathway.
Thing.
Yeah.
I'm really like,
what age are you at this point when you signed in for Man City?
9 and 10.
Wow, that young. Wow.
Yeah, so I was young. So I signed for Man City I signed for Man City at like 8, 9, was there for like till like 10, 11.
Yeah.
And then my dad said, we got to go back down. So then I remember just being gutted, like, you're ruining my career, all of that stuff. When he was like, what are you talking about? You're 11 years old. Like, shut up. Sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously, when you're young, you don't really know what you're talking about.
No,
like,
that's how you feel back then. At the time, that's everything, yeah.
And then he was just like, you'll be all right. Like, you're young. Like, just enjoy your life.
So you had to leave Man City's academy because your dad moved down to Peterborough?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And what happened after that then when you left Man City?
Cool. So then when I've left Man City, I think... I don't know the facts on this. So I don't want no one to quote me. You get me? But there's something to do. Basically, West Ham Academy had links to Manchester City Academy.
Yeah.
So obviously, every academy has links to each other. But they had quite decent links back then. And I think Man City said to West Ham, look, we've got this boy, Tyreek Hyde.
Yeah.
He has to move back down to London. Do you want to take him off us for some sort of deal or something like that? But obviously I'm really young. And I was like, yeah, sure. We'll have a look at him. We'll come in. I remember I went to London, but I think the deal ended up being if I play a professional game for West Ham United, Man City get a bit of money.
Right. Okay.
That was the deal at the end of the day, basically. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, whatever, cool. And I remember coming down to London and obviously it was Saturday they had training West Ham. I got a good memory, by the way.
You have. I was just thinking that.
And then, my dad obviously had a game himself. So this is where my granddad played a mad role, massive role in my career. So shout out to my granddad. Like, I literally used to stay at my granddad's house every single Friday night.
Yeah.
And he'd take me to training matches because obviously my dad weren't really about.
Right.
He was about, but obviously he lived with us, but he was doing his own career. Yeah. Do you know
so
what I'm saying?
So he couldn't drive you to a game or whatever. Yeah.
So obviously my granddad used to help my mum out. Yeah. Obviously my mum's got my brother and look after my. So I used to stay at my granddad's house in Beckton and he used to take me to West Ham. Like every single game my granddad would take me. Every single district games. I played for my district. You know, when you play for your county, my granddad would take me to everywhere and he just loved it. He loved football, do you know what I'm saying? And I owe a lot to him, to be fair, because he sacrificed a lot.
Yeah.
And he took me to a lot of stuff. So shout out Granddad Ken.
I love that.
Yeah.
Shout out Granddad Ken. So you moved to West Ham.
So I moved to West Ham.
About 11, 12. And then how long were you in the academy for?
Then I was and then this is where things started to get a bit like football. Obviously, I was loving football up until this point. I think I trained with West Ham twice. They said, yeah, we'll sign him. I've signed for West Ham. Yeah, I was all right, you know.
Yeah, I know. I've seen you,
I signed for West Ham now. And then I don't know, football just started. You know when you start getting to like 12, your body starts to change a little bit and it starts developing. Yeah. And I just feel like things was happening with me that weren't really making sense to me. And also at the same time, there was obviously players have been at West Ham since they was like 8.
Yeah.
So their West Ham had their favourites they're bringing through. And I feel like at every academy in especially in this country, I can't speak for any other country. I feel like every single age group at every top player academy, there's two boys they really want to push.
Really?
And the rest of the players, they're just there to help.
Really?
And I thought I was just one of the ones that are there to help.
Because there's so few that actually make it.
You know what I'm
it?
Saying? So I feel like that
1% or something.
I feel like the academies highlight their key players that they think is gonna make it, or they want to make it for whatever reason it may be. And then everyone else is just there to make up numbers, because obviously you got to play with 9-11 people. So I feel like the academy system is a bit mad in that sense in
this
country. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really agree with it, really.
So you had a, it wasn't the experience you thought it would be having been at Man City at West Ham. How long were you there for?
I was up to West Ham to about under 14s, under 15s. I can't remember which one.
And then they released you?
And they, released me.
How difficult was that?
You know what? They didn't even release me. I just didn't want to go in. Like, I remember just switching. After one, I can't even remember. I just switched in my head one time. I was like, I don't want to go training. Like, really? Petrified to go training, petrified to play. Like,
what? Why were you petrified?
I don't know. When I look back in it, I don't really know. I think I was just scared of, like, I just didn't feel confident whatsoever in myself. Or, like, I don't think no one was really backing me. Obviously, my family was always backing me and stuff. I don't think anyone at the club was really backing me at West Ham. I don't think anyone really cared.
So confidence played a big part in your development.
Yeah, and I'm a confidence person. Do you know what I mean? If my confidence is low, I could have a really bad day, week, task. If my confidence is high, I'll be the best. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's, and I feel that's like a lot of people. And confidence plays a massive part, especially in football, because I generally feel like to play well and you have to feel good. Otherwise, it's not really going to work, really. You have to really
and a lot of players, elite players, you talk about that mindset. You look at like Haaland or Kane or people like that. They do have this elite mindset, don't they? I mean, we're talking about the creme de la creme there.
Yeah, 100%.
So when you...
I didn't have that. I didn't have an elite mindset when it comes to football.
You didn't?
If I'll be honest, no. So that's I didn't really have an elite mindset when it came to football.
Mm. So you left West Ham. Then where did your journey take you next?
I've left West Ham, then stopped playing football.
Completely.
For about a year and a half.
Wow.
I just said to my dad, Dad, I'm done with it. He was like, all right.
Did you feel that the weight of expectation, given the fact that your dad had played Premier League football, was there always that pressure? It sounds like you've got an amazing relationship with your dad and he's always been there for you. And, you know, you speak very fondly of him, of course. But was there that weight of expectation or pressure to follow in his footsteps?
Not everyone asked me that question, but no.
Not at all?
I never ever thought of it once.
Really?
Never. Because I feel like even as I am as a person, I've never, ever, ever compare myself to others in any situation, even whether it's my dad, anyone.
That's
never
a good way to be there.
Yeah, I've just never, ever done it. Like, ever since I was young, up until this day, never. Like, if I see someone doing well, I'll clap for them, be happy. Yeah. If I see someone doing wrong, I'll just say, well, that's bad.
That's a healthy way to be as well. I think it's very easy to look at people who are doing better, but actually there's a lot of people a lot worse than how we're doing. You know, so I think that's a healthy way to be.
Yeah.
So you falling out, would you say you sort of fell out of love with the game then? Because that's a young age to... fall out of love.
Yeah, as a young age to fall out of love. Yeah, to, I
with
fell
the
like,
game.
I fell out in love with it completely, really, if I'm being honest.
At 14?
At 14. And I was just like, I'm done. And then he was like, my dad was like, all right, cool, fine, but you've got to do something. Like, you can't just sit around doing nothing. Sort of thing. So, what do you want to do? Like, what drives you? What's your passion? What's anything? And I was just like, I don't know. And to be fair, like, during that time, my behaviour started getting a bit worse at school. I started getting, obviously, I won't go and training in the evenings anymore. I kind of lost that discipline. Mm. That football kind of brought me in that structure.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So it was just like, obviously, I wasn't bad. I didn't do no bad stuff. I was just a bit lazy.
Yeah.
Just, you know, moping around.
I felt like you didn't have a purpose.
Yeah, just no purpose. Yeah, you know, just going through life and that. But I feel like at that age, it's just fine to have no purpose.
But like, or not know what you want to do.
Yeah, know what you want to do. I feel like that age is fine. So I was like that. But my dad was like drilling into me, like, you have to have a purpose. You have to have a purpose. Cause, and I'm glad he did that, to be fair. And then, obviously, I started. Then I started just going to school, do you know what it was? I was kind of enjoying it because I felt like I was the norm. I wasn't a kid at school that played for West Ham anymore.
Right.
I wasn't the one that everyone was looking up to play football.
And you liked that? You had a sort of normal.
Yeah, I loved it. I actually loved it because I just wanted to be, because you know what I always felt? Yeah. I always felt from a young age, there was always more to me than what people always expect from me.
Right.
I've always felt I've got more to offer than what I'm actually putting out. And like, I don't know. I always felt like I've got good. I always had a good personality at school. Yeah. Like, I was the guy that could make people laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have to be that stiff guy that just plays for West Ham. Yeah. And just, you know what I'm saying? I didn't want to be that guy.
Because it's interesting you say that you like the fact you were sort of, you weren't the kid from West Ham. Because you'd imagine a lot of kids would look up to or be jealous or want to be that kid from West Ham. But you're saying the exact opposite.
Yeah.
That when you left, you just had a sense of normality.
Yeah.
And you could have a kick about and enjoy it. That's rather than have a kick about to become pro. Or whatever.
That's what I loved, obviously, because obviously now I'm playing for the school team for a bit, and it's like I'm not tired. That's obviously I still captain my school team and stuff like that. I was still the best player.
Still
in my
balling,
year. But it weren't like when I'm playing against other schools, like that's that West Ham player. Like,
right.
He's just good at football.
Yeah.
Like, he's just that guy that's good at football. He's cool. He's the cool guy. Yeah. I just wanted to be the normal guy that's good amongst my peers and. I just wanted to be the guy, feel like the guy. Do you know what I'm saying? Really, I didn't want to. Yeah, he's that guy. Oh yeah, he's going to be good because he plays for West Ham. Blah, 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 blah. I didn't want to be that guy, really. So I was loving it. I was like socially, probably when I quit football socially, that's when I really came into myself socially as a person. And then I think it got to a point where, cool, now I felt good again about myself and about things I was doing. I was like, cool, dad, let's give this football stuff.
Right.
I want to give this football stuff another shot.
So that's when you went to Dagenham. And
that's when I went to Dagenham Redbridge. I ended up going there. I remember going to Dagenham Redbridge. I went in my West Ham kit from a couple of years before. And I had slits in my eyebrows and all sorts.
Yeah. By the way, I played for West Ham.
Yeah. And I remember I went there and the boys they were giving me a big banner like, do you play for West Ham by any chance?
And I remember just full kit, boots, tape,
you know, proper full kit wanker. Then I remember going to Dagenham Redbridge thinking, what is this? Because obviously I'm used to...
Oh, really, you noticed the drop in disrespect to them, but the levels to West Ham,
straight away. I was like, they're training on sand, AstroTurf,
right?
Like, this is what I train on at school,
Thinking
about that. Obviously, West Ham's a category one academy, like you have the proper stuff, and I was just like, this is mad. But I went there, and that's when I started enjoying it again because it was like, we were playing against instead of playing against the Arsenals and the Tottenhams and what was we playing? You know, Charlton's, Crystal Palace's, we're playing against like Southend, MK Dons, Northampton, Luton, and I'm like, I don't even know what these teams are, like, but I'm doing my thing. You know? I always felt like I was a bit better, so I always felt like. Anyway, ended up signing up to 2 years deal. I started loving football again. We're smashing it. Got to like under 15, under 16. And then I remember my dad sitting me down one day and was like, look, I've been offered the youth team job at Dagenham and Redbridge. Because now he was doing his coaching badge because he stopped playing football. I've been offered the youth team job at Dagenham and Redbridge.
Yeah.
And I'm just about to go into being a scholar at Dagenham Redbridge.
Right.
And he was like, how do you feel? And I remember the first feeling I thought was just like, why? Like, no. I remember just feeling no.
Oh, because your dad would potentially be your coach.
My dad would have ended up being my coach. Right,
which I really didn't want. Why? Because the stigma teaches.
Yeah, because the stigma attached. You know, everyone says, oh, you're only here because your dad. And people started doing that. But anyway, cool. So then, but I was always the best. I felt like I was the best in my age group. Yeah. Or one of the best. Maybe not the best, but I was good. I was good enough to warrant being there and getting a scholarship. So then, I remember my first feeling when he said, I'm getting used to it. I was like, no, please. He was like, all right. He said, fine. And I think we let it simmer for a little bit. And I was like, you know what? I've realized I'm kind of being selfish here because I knew he was being a, he's been a pro. This is his break to go into coaching. Do you know what I'm saying? He don't know anything else. All he knows is football. Like, he's not going to go
first work. Opportunity.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I even think he was doing, I even think my dad, when he stopped playing football, I think he was even doing a couple other jobs in that, like grafting jobs.
Yeah.
I hated it. So I was like, you know what? Like, he loves football, like proper loves it. So I was like, you know what? Go on then. Like, I'm being selfish. How can I tell you no in it? Sort of thing. Yeah. So he's ended up being a youth team coach at Dagenham Redbridge. I'm under 16. I've ended up, when you're under 16, when you're one of the best years, you play up with the 18s. For the first time, it's me and my dad are just clashing.
First time ever in your life.
Pretty much. First time ever, really. Yeah. We never really used to clash like that. We'd have little
arguments
like that, but now it's clashing because I'm getting paid now at this point to play football. So I'm an apprentice. It's an apprenticeship.
And you've got your journey starting.
Imagine that. I feel like I'm starting.
Yeah.
And his journey coaching is starting.
He's starting, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like, we're just both, I'm starting trying to be a pro. He's starting trying to be a coach, and it's like I'm learning new things. He's learning new things. I'm his son. I'm his dad. I don't like what he's saying sometimes. He don't like the way I'm playing sometimes. Yeah. You know, we're just clashing. And I was like, this is a myth. Like, I can't keep doing this. And then Elvis, that's when all the stigma comes into it. Like, oh, you're only here because your dad.
And did you get that?
I got that hard. Like, when I was at
Did you?
Yeah, I got that hard.
How bad was it? Just people, you lost friendships and relationships with other players because of it.
Yeah, like obviously when you're in your under 16s, you're all fighting for a scholarship.
Yeah, of course. And very small percentage.
So, and only a few get a scholarship. Yeah. And that's probably the toughest time when you're going for scholarships.
Yeah.
And obviously my dad is the under 18s manager, so he has a say in who gets a scholarship. Yeah. So it's just like, so obviously people's parents, you can feel it. Like, I proper felt it. Like,
even just walking into training.
When I walk into training, I'm seeing everyone looking at me. I'm thinking, and then it got to a point, you know, at first it used to hit me. Like, it used to really affect me. And I think it started affecting my performance. And then it got to a point where I was like, do you know what? Like, f*** you lot, because I'm better than you anyway. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So excuse my language.
We'll bleep it out.
Yeah. It got to a point where I was like, yeah, forget you lot, because I'm better than you anyway. Yeah. Like, regardless of my daddy, and then I started just playing well.
I can tell that winds you up, though, just looking at your body
proper
language
winding
now.
Me up.
Even now.
Because, like, my dad's really not that type of guy.
Yeah.
Like, if I was bad at football, he'd tell me pack it in. Yeah. Like, if I was bad at football, I'd pack it in.
And you know that because of the level he's played at.
Yeah, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he'd just pack it in, bro.
Yeah.
I know that, right? And I'd pack it in as well. Because I'm an honest guy. When I play bad, I'd always put my hands up, say I play bad. If I play well today, I'll say I play well. Like, it was never, I'm not one of the deluded players. There's a lot of deluded players.
That thinks they're better than
that. I never thought I was. I always thought, if anything, I probably undersold myself in football, really and truly, if I'm being honest. I always play it down, but I was all right.
So that sounds like a tricky period then. So how did you navigate sort of through that? Because you then went on to play for Dagenham's first team.
Yeah, so yeah, cool. So then once I got my head around, people were going to talk no matter what. Mm. I think that once that started clicking, my performances started getting better.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of things that happened, like that boost your confidence. Like, for example, my dad one time was called me up to the under 16 training for the 18s in a youth team game. And I think I've scored two.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like little things that help you get through, and it's like, all right, cool. Like,
yeah.
What can you tell me now, sort of thing. Yeah. And I started feeling confident again. So then, ended up being in the actual youth team now. So this is now, I've got a scholarship.
Yeah.
Where I'm going training every single day and seeing my dad. So I'm waking up in the morning, seeing my dad in the morning, going to work, seeing my dad at work, going home, seeing my dad. So that's when it was like, it just got a lot. Like, it got a lot. And I remember, obviously, when you're a scholarship, you do schoolwork. And I remember, I think me and a couple of other boys was messing around in college. We got on Wednesday and I didn't get my assignment done on time or whatever. And I remember me and a couple of other boys didn't do it. And my dad benched me for like 4 weeks.
Mm.
So I didn't play. I was on the bench for 4 weeks in the youth team. And I was just like, what are you doing? And he was I was like, he did that. But he's like, but you're my son. So like, you need to learn first.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
So it's been hard.
So it was hard. Yeah. Like, instead of my dad, like your dad being a manager, helping you and that, like it kind of probably did the other way around. And I remember one day, I'll never forget, is when obviously when you're at Dagenham Red Bridge, the first team was like League Two.
Mm.
So that's like, League Two. Mm. They was training on the pitch next to us. And the manager at the time was like, we need a midfielder. Can you send one over to my dad? And I remember just looking at him and he looked at me and I looked in his eyes and he was just like, he sent someone else to go train with the first team. But at that time, I generally was performing. I warranted going with the first team time. And when I went home that day, I was like, Dad, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Like, why have you done that? And he was like, because you probably did deserve it, but you're not ready.
Wow.
Like, you are not ready.
So he was pushing you more than other players, in effect.
Yeah, mentally. He knew that I wasn't probably mentally. In hindsight, I wasn't mentally ready to go take that step into men's football yet. Ability-wise,
Yeah.
Out of all my peers. But there were probably players that had more stronger mindset than me, was more mature than me. I wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? That was probably more mentally ready. So he sent someone else. And he's like, when your time comes, your time will come, sort of thing. Just keep going. And I was just thinking like, what's wrong with you? That sort of thing. You know what I'm saying?
That's tough.
And I was like, whatever. So I just kept get my head down. And then towards the end of my first year scholar, I started training with the first team more and more. So like, I felt like I was proper developing as a player at this time when I was in my first year scholar. To be fair, everything my dad, like, he sent me there the right time. Everything did it at the right, like, he helped me, proper nurtured me, really. Mm. So, touch wood, obviously, I don't think. But my dad's a great coach, though. He nurtures a lot of players like that in what way, like, he'll send... Yeah. He knew when to send the right player.
Yeah, that's an important coaching aspect, isn't it? Because you might be the best player, but it's like you see some young players get thrown in at the deep end too early, and some thrive, but others it's too early in their
development. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So then I started training with the first team a lot towards the end of my first year scholar, and I was like, I was doing really well on the first team training, and I was like cool with all the players, and like the manager was really like starting to like me, rate me, and stuff like that. And I thought good. I'm feeling good. And then towards the end of my first year scholar, I got offered he offered me a pro contract. So now in my second year scholar, I'm in a first team changing room.
Wow.
So now I've left my dad, I've left my peers, like my friends that I grew up with, like my family basically. Because when you're a youth team family is different sort of family.
Is it?
You're cleaning the first team's boots together.
So you're bonding a lot
together.
Yeah,
proper bonding. Yeah. You're going away games together.
Yeah.
You're eating together. You're a proper family. Like this is, everyone's going for the same thing and like you're pushing each other. So then I went straight into the men's changing room. At like 17 at Dagenham Red Bridge, and I was like a real eye opener sort of thing. Yeah, like I really grew up. That made me grow up really quick. Like,
yeah,
I remember the slack. I loved it though. There were sick guys there. There were some proper good pros at Dagenham.
I was looking at your career, and obviously I'm going to get into whether you're still playing or not now, but you've been at Dagenham, Bishop Stortford, Dartford, Dulwich, Hamlet, Faversham Town, a few loans in there as well. How difficult was that period moving a lot? Because you alluded to it with your dad, but you've sort of mirrored what he was doing and not being settled in one club.
Yeah.
Was it tough when clubs are letting you go or you're moving? How difficult were those periods for you?
Yeah, no, they were very, very, very difficult. Obviously, you know, when you realise that a club don't really want you anymore. The Dagenham one really hurt me.
Did it?
Because obviously I was a scholar there. I went through quite a lot of years at Dagenham Redbridge, and then, yeah, that hurt me. So, yeah, when a club don't really want you, it's obviously like you just feel like you're not really good enough, you're not wanted. You know, just the feeling of kind of like reject, really. Rejection. That's the feeling you get, innit? But instead of, you can either go one or two ways, really. You can either say, all right, cool, I'm going to really prove them to that. But like I said earlier, when I said I didn't really have that elite mindset when it came to football. I just went the other way on like, oh, cool, maybe they are, right? Yeah, starts self-doubt, starts creeping in. Mate, but when football is a massive game of opinions, you know what I'm saying? But I used to take people's opinions as almost facts.
Did you?
When really, when in hindsight, now I've grown up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't take no one's opinion as facts, even like now. Like, I wouldn't do it. I've grown up. So I kind of know how it was. But I think like back then, it was just a lot for me to handle. So then that's when I started like depression started kicking in, really.
Did it?
Like depression. Just drinking in my bed.
So what, at your lowest then, so this is a time when clubs are letting you go, they're saying you're not good enough, you're going home from training and just drinking?
I'm just drinking from the bed. Like
every day?
From the ball. Every other day, really, every day.
Really?
Yeah, like quite bad, really, and no one knew. I just get a
Did
bottle.
You not tell your dad or your family?
No, I didn't tell no one, so no one knew. Wow. But they knew I was sad. Not sad, but they knew like I was going through it and that, but they didn't know how bad it was really, the extent. It was only until that Rising Ballers interview came out, they was like, well, why didn't you say something to us? Yeah. That sort of thing. It really hit them, really, and I was like, oh, it's...
And why do you think you turned to alcohol? Was it just something that you needed for the pain that you were going through, or was it your escape mechanism? What was the reason sort of behind that?
I feel like, it was a bit of an escape, really. Obviously, when you start drinking, you can't really feel anything. So I just didn't want to feel anything, really. And it's mad now, because obviously, now I do music. I literally, my first single, which I'm going to release, I shot a music video on Monday. Oh, sorry, can I say days?
Yeah.
I shot a music video this week. It's going to come out. It's literally about that sort of situation. So like, kind of it's a dark message.
Is it?
Yeah, it's kind of it's like a dark message, but I've made it in like a fun, catchy way. So yeah, it was quite hard to like really get my thoughts out into the... So yeah, it's a deep song, really.
Yeah, I'm going to get into music in a bit, actually, because you've got so much going on, but I just want to touch upon what you said there. So that music video is inspired by your own journey. At your lowest, because I think this might help a lot. There's obviously sadly a lot of people that will be going through issues with mental health, depression, anxiety. How did you get through that? And how bad were things sort of at your lowest, would you say, and how you overcame that?
Do you know what? I feel like I've always been lucky in a sense of I've got like a very, very good family.
Yeah.
I'm very supportive family and a very, very, very strong supportive friendship group, which I've, there's two things I've never take for granted.
Support network is so
my support network is very good. And I'll be honest, if it weren't for that support network, I don't know what I'd be doing today, really.
Really?
Yeah, to be honest, I wouldn't have a clue. So yeah, that literally, they got me through. My friends and family got me through a lot of stuff. So yeah, like, shout out to them.
Was the key opening up then? When you said that you had depression, you were drinking, you didn't tell anyone, was actually opening up and talking to your family the first step in helping that situation?
No, bro, I'd never told my family, but I've always been someone that finds it easier to talk to my friends than my family.
Really?
So like, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm lucky I had a strong friendship group. Because if I didn't have that friendship group, I don't think I even had the guts or the balls to tell my dad I'm coming home from training and just drinking. Do you know what I'm saying? But I'd tell my friend, I'd look at my friend and be like, yo, like.
Do you know what's mad, mate? I've had issues with my mental health and anxiety. I had more so than depression, but I had exactly the same thing as the hardest people I found to talk to or open up.
The ones closest
were your families, because you don't want to burden them with more stress.
Literally.
So like, the way you were saying that, it's different kinds of problems we both had, but I can relate to a lot of what you said there, which is mad. No, but since speaking to them, they will say, please tell me if anything.
Yeah. Now I'm quite open with my family, to be fair. Like if I'm having a bad week or a bad day, I'll sit down and I'll take the time to talk, because talking actually does make you feel better. Anyone that's watching or listening, because I used to think, well, I don't want to tell anyone, but talking generally does make things feel better. Yeah. People are there for you and it'll make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
Clears your head in a sense. Just lets it come out.
Yeah, really, great, great point that. Mm. If you didn't have that support network, what direction do you think your life would have gone in?
That's what I think. I don't know. Like, I don't know what I would have been doing. Lads, like, I was 20s. I just didn't want to wake up.
Really?
When I think back now, I didn't want to wake up. Really, I just didn't want to go. I didn't want to wake up. Go to training. I didn't want to go out with my friends. didn't want to go shopping, didn't want to go meet girls, didn't want to do nothing, just didn't want to wake up really. Or like, didn't, or when I did wake up, I just didn't want to leave the bed. So yeah, so I don't know what I'll be doing because you can't really do much with that. So
yeah. Well, it's powerful, mate. Credit for you for overcoming that as well, like, and everything you've achieved since then. So was that part of your reason to take a break from football? Because I was going to ask, you're still only in your mid-20s now. We're going to get into Love Island in a bit, but are you technically retired? Are you not? Are you looking for a club? What's where are you at with your footballing journey now?
Yeah, do you know what? In football, my thought process for my footballing journey right now is a weird one because, obviously, like you said, we played in a charity game the other day and stuff like that. And when I do play in them, when I'm on a pitch, I think, oh, like, I kind of miss this, you know? Like, you know, you miss like doing certain things. Yeah. That's my thing. Like I don't know if I miss it enough. I don't miss everything, but I'll miss taking a ball on my back foot and like putting
and
a man in.
It depends on what comes in.
Yeah, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm definitely retired. How much they offering?
Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? It maybe depends. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd go back. If I do go back, I wouldn't really go back on. That's what I'm saying. If I go back now, maybe I would enjoy it more because I'll be in a different sort of whole different mindset. Like, I don't really have respect for you. Thankfully, God's grace. Like I don't need the football. But back then, I needed the football. So when things weren't going right at football, I'd be like, oh, losing my head, like getting frustrated. Blah, blah, blah. But now I think, you know, if things don't go right, you know, like I might miss a header. The manager might drop me this week, might drop me next week. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But back then it was like, yo, I need to play. I need to play what's going on. So maybe now I'll be able to play more free. Play better, probably.
But you took a break from football a few years back. So what was the decision that because of the depression and the injuries and where your mental health was at? Was that the reason why you decided to step away from football then?
No, I didn't take a break. I took a break when I was young.
Oh, did you? Right.
Yeah,
sorry.
I didn't take this one. I went through the depression and everything, but I'm not taking a break. But thankfully, and this is why I always say, like, obviously COVID was a mad thing, but thankfully COVID happened because when I was at my lowest in football, COVID hit and cancelled the season. So I was like, oh, like, it was a saving. It was literally a saving grace.
Really?
And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, I remember literally just thinking, thank God. And something just switched in me and was like, cool.
Because you couldn't play.
Because I didn't have to go.
Because you weren't able mentally to play football, then you just wanted to be at home.
I was at Dulwich Hamlet at the time. And that's when I was at my lowest. Like really, that's when I was really going home drinking and like bad, like a
when
lot.
You said drinking, was it just beers or was it spirits?
Hennessy.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're drinking full bottles of Hennessy?
Full bottles of Hennessy, yeah. Just from a bottle and just...
Every other day?
And Dulwich Hamlet at that time, we used to train every day.
Wow.
So I'd wake up with a hangover, drive to Dulwich Hamlet from Essex, train in a bad state, train crap, go home, do the same thing.
Drink a whole bottle of Hennessy?
And I won't drink a whole bottle every day, but half one day, half the next day.
But that's still
Yeah, it's still a lot of alcohol to consume, you know what I mean?
So that was all, in your life, that was all you were doing, basically training, drinking. And the reason COVID, because obviously it's a horrible time for many people, but for you, it was a blessing in disguise.
For me,
because you didn't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, for me, blessing in disguise, because I didn't have to go to Dulwich Hamlet every single day. And then I realised, and I was still getting paid, you know, when you get put on furlough. So it was like, like literally a saving grace. I was still getting my money from Dulwich Hamlet.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to go to Dulwich Hamlet. So I didn't have to go to what was making me sad. So it was a foot. This is where comes in. When the football season stopped, I had more time to think and I wasn't drinking as much. Mm. But I was still drinking. But I wasn't drinking as much.
Yeah.
And obviously I wasn't going to football. And I literally just thought, yeah, thank God, blessing this guys. I said, oh, you know what? And then something clicked with me. One of my friends called me and was like, oh, look, like, you're not playing football right now, so you got all this time and you're still getting paid. Why don't you get another job? You get double money. And my mum must have told me that as well. But I've never worked, all I've known is football, so I've never worked before in my life. Yeah. I've never even had because I used to do work experience and that, but I've never had, I worked at Amazon Warehouse a couple of times for one day here and there. That's a madness. But anyone who does that, shout them out. Literally shout them out, because that is a hard job.
Yeah, okay.
And then one of my friends rang me and was like, look, my football season's been furlough. I've got this, I'm with this agency that works at schools and the hours are 9 till 3, like, and it's good money, you get day rate and all that. Mm. And I was like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, what do you mean work at a school? Like, I was like, I remember just thinking, what are you wearing? He's like, no, bro, trust me, like, you can wear what you want. Like, come, trust me, like, it's a special needs school, like, it's sick, man, like, it's nice. proper rewarding, like, it's sick, like, the kid, like, you get proper close with the kids and that. And I was like, you know what, cool, let me try. He went, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try it. Because I had obviously now bare free time, double money, like, why not? Decent money as well for that job. And then I remember going, I'm on my first day, and I just remember thinking, what am I doing? Like, we got to lunchtime, and I was like, what am I doing?
Really?
Like, the school that I worked at was called Phoenix in Bow. So it's a full special needs school.
Right.
So some classes are non-verbal classes.
Wow.
So the kids can't even talk. And bearing in mind, I've literally just come from playing football.
Yeah, so that's all you know.
That's all I know, I've literally just gone straight into this.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's a proper real eye opener. And to be and generally, that job also saved me as well. From,
did it?
Yeah.
In what way?
Like, I saw life in a whole different light.
Did you? Gave you a sense of perspective?
Yeah, I swear, like, gave me a sense like...
Yeah,
like,
I bet.
Like, I'm sad because I'm not playing on the weekend for Dulwich Hamlet, but I'm working with a kid that's got Down syndrome right now, and that's him every single day. And like, something just... And I changed as a person working at that place as well. Like, even my whole family will say it, my friends will say it. Like, bro, like, I became proper more well-grounded as a person and like, well, more like
empathetic.
It
put your problems in perspective. It's like your biggest problem is not playing in a game.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
children who are unwell, it gives you a sense of perspective and wants you to be closer to those individuals.
Like, I was deep in it. Like, I was working at that school, going to school, and I used to love going to work then. I'm deep in it. Like, cool, like, you're going home, you're just drinking every day. You don't pay no bills. You don't pay no bills. You might pay your mum. I pay my mum a little bit of rent here and there, but it ain't nothing mad. You ain't got no kids to feed. Like, your mum and dad are still together. Like, you have a night. Like, it made me realize that I'm actually blessed. I've got a brother and a sister.
Yeah.
Mum and dad that both love me, still alive.
Massively
thank God.
Blessed.
Like,
yeah.
I'm massively blessed. I live in a nice area. Yeah. We don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's there to be really sad about? That's when I started reading. That's when I started getting, okay, now this is how life really works. Like,
it's mad because a lot of people don't look at that. Do they? If you've got friends and family around you, that you are blessed, and it's but it took you working at the special needs school to really twig that.
Yeah, it took me COVID to happen.
Yeah,
spending a lot more time with my family as a whole as well. Also, I became much closer with my family during COVID.
Did you?
And working at that special needs school because I was like, wow, like. And then I remember just going to. I used to like going to work as well.
Yeah,
because it's not every day we go into football and it's just football banter running every single day. Like, I'm going to football and I'm chatting to a woman who's 55 with three kids and we're doing the same job and like she's telling me about her life and I'm telling me about her. I'm learning about people from different cultures.
Yeah, I love
like,
that.
Like, it's mad. Like, in the staff room, like, that was the first time I had a staff room and I'm all just being a bit little lively in the staff room and I'm thinking, I like the socializer that work, you know what I'm saying? And the job was rewarding. So I used to always, that's what I'm saying, I always felt like I'm someone who just need, like, there's always more to me. Like, I want to just bounce off people, like, show my personality. At football, I don't really think you get to show your personality because you're kind of like boxed into, you're a footballer, you have to act like a footballer. I never wanted to act like a footballer. Like, I never wanted to act like a footballer once. I never wanted to be just, I got an LV wash bag and that's just me walking around. I never wanted to be that guy. Yeah. I just wanted to be the guy, that's that cool guy. He's funny. He can chat with old people, young people, black people, white people. Yeah. Like, I actually always wanted to be someone that can just interact with a lot of people and different people. And work allowed me to do that. Also at the same time, getting paid decent money and seeing life in a different light and helping, at the end of the day, special needs children.
Do you know what's amazing about this is, like, maybe wrongly, apologies, but obviously before I go into this pod, I imagine where the direction is going to go and I'm like, obviously you're a good looking lad. You played football, you're into music, you went into Love Island, the direction of where I thought this chat would go. But the most passionate I've seen you so far in this podcast is talking, which is, and credit to you, is you talking about working the special needs school, and you said that
it saved you,
and like the way your body language then when you're talking about that was really like that was a really important moment in your life.
It was, I always think that day, that period was sick. I even brought a couple of my friends in.
That's amazing,
like,
mate.
From my area, I was like, bro, you lot need to come and do this well. Like, and they used to come, and then we used to be at work together.
All of Dagenham's team is suddenly working.
A couple of boys that I was youth team with used to work with us together. So, like,
I love that.
One of them brought me in actually. His name's Jordy Munger, so shout him out. So yeah, man, like, that was sick. I used to love that. I used to just felt normal. Like,
it's really interesting what you say about perspective, because I've had periods in my life where actually something happens and you do get a real perspective about thinking your football team losing is the end of the world when it's actually not, when you've given perspective. So it's lovely hearing that story. I'm sure the kids bonded with you amazingly.
Yeah.
So you know where I'm going to go next? Love Island, which I would say 98% of people know you from. And you know, it's, your life's blown up since then. You've got a million Instagram followers. Yeah. How did Love Island come about?
So basically, Love Island was a thing where they was kind of messaging me on Instagram for like a couple of years before.
You're playing hard to get.
Yeah, like, basically. Yeah, they was playing with me and I was saying, no, I'm playing hard to get.
You say yes straight away, they've been your...
You know what? But genuinely, when they messaged me for the first couple of years, I was like, there's no way.
Do you know what? So many people have said the same thing with reality. They don't believe, because a random DM, because you get a lot of random DMs now, didn't you? I mean, I imagine yours is way more than mine is, but you do get a lot, don't you? But you didn't believe it was real.
No, I knew it was real. I was just like, there's no way I'm doing it.
Oh, right. Sorry.
I knew it was them, but I was just like, there's no way I'm doing it.
Why?
This. Because do you know what it was? I don't know what I thought. As mad as it sounds, that I've actually gone on Love Island, I didn't really like Love Islanders back then. Like,
the people in it?
I didn't really like them.
Really?
Like, I never thought I was like them.
Right.
That's my biggest thing. It's not that I didn't like them. I just thought, like, you're right, yeah. You're like, you're good looking, whatever, whatever. Yeah. But like, you're not like me. Like, yeah. I actually just think you're not like me. So, and I used to watch the show and I used to think, oh, how would I act in that situation? Because what he's doing, there's no way I'd do that. Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah. I used to think, I'm not like them. So I think, I just thought it weren't for me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how people was going to perceive me. I didn't know what I was going to think of me.
Were you worried about that?
I was worried about that.
The perception, because it's such a global show with millions of followers and you're filmed all the time. Yeah. One confrontation and one thing can affect people's entire perception. Was that a concern for you going into
it? Yeah, it was, 100%.
Yeah.
And even now, I'll be honest, I'll be the first to admit, I feel like I was, when I went on Love Island, I was different anyway. I feel like there hasn't really been a guy like me on Love Island before.
So why did you decide to go in then if you had those doubts?
Because I was feeling... Yeah, I was working at a special needs school and then I moved to another school in my area. And I was going to training in the evenings, playing semi-pro football. Yeah. So I was doing that and I was doing that. And I thought, you know what? I can't really do this forever. I'm kind of losing the love for football. Like, I was 24 at the time. I ain't going to play Premier
League. And you're on short contracts. You're on short contracts.
Yeah.
You don't know where your stability's like.
I'm 24 in Ishmael Prem. I ain't going Premier League.
Right, so got you.
I need... What can I do? And I always think, what can I do? And I was thinking, maybe I could start a business.
Yeah.
I was sitting down. Like every day I'd get a notepad and I'd say, I want to start this business.
Would you?
I want to start this business. And I'd think, no, scrap that out. Let me do this. Yeah. And that's literally every single day. And also them times I started going to the music studio as well.
Yeah.
So I started making music at that time. But everyone thinks I just started making music after Love Island. But I started making
music.
Oh,
you did it before?
I was doing it before. It's only now I'm doing it properly.
Yeah.
So then I said, what can I do? Like, I need to change my life. I don't want to work at this school anymore. I loved it. I feel like I'm done with it. Like, it's helped me. I'm always be, what's the word? Grateful for the opportunity and that I did that job. But it's not what, I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
but I didn't know what I wanted to do. That was my problem. So I knew I want to live like this. I like nice things and I like, you know what I'm saying? I like nice stuff.
Fair point.
I like doing nice things. The way I'm living right now, it's not sustainable for what I really want to do. That's how I was thinking. So I need to start something, do something. And I knew a lot of people. So I thought I can maybe network and do something and do stuff. And I remember before even Love Island, I tried signing up to modeling agencies. Signing up to modeling agencies and it was all like wishy-washy, blah, 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 like not really getting back to me. And I was like, all right, cool. You know what I'm saying? That's cool. They weren't really having me. I was like, all right, so what else can I do? And then I was like, cool. Let's just try Love Island.
Because it's almost right place, right time.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It literally just landed in the right place at the time where I don't want to play football anymore.
4 years earlier, your football career, you'd have gone
I was trying to play football, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to be a pro footballer.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this ain't football's well done. I don't want to work in a school anymore. What can I do? And I remember thinking was, I just want to get paid for being me. That's all I kept saying to myself. I just want to get paid for being my mum. When I told my mum, I'm going to Love Island, why do you want to go in there? I just want to get paid for being me, mum.
How did your dad react when you
were then?
There's a story there, isn't there?
Yeah. So I remember now, the whole Love Island process is kind of a long process. So I remember I was doing the first couple of steps.
Yeah, what is the process? Go on.
Yeah, cool. So they basically call you, they message you, you reply to the DM.
Yeah.
They say, what's your number? You send your number. Yeah. They give you like a brief chat. It's like a 5-minute chat. Right. Like, oh, what are you doing in the summer? What you like? What girls do you like? Da, 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 da,
yeah.
Da, 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 da. Are you single? Whatever, cool.
Yeah.
Then from there they say, Zoom call. So then you have a Zoom call with them, which is a more like 15-minute chat.
With how many people would that be?
Just one person. So
wow.
Yeah. So it's like face-to-face. They're proper getting to know you. Like,
it's like a talent booker type thing.
Yeah, sort of thing. Yeah. They're proper getting to know you. And they're just having like a normal brief conversation. Yeah. They're quite fun, to be fair. The whole process is actually quite fun. I loved it. And then you're having a chat. I'm just being blatantly honest. Because I was just thinking, if whatever happens, happens, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I think like I started to realize they started to kind of like me because they started ringing me a bit more and more people started to ring me.
So it's a long process of calls back and forth. Yeah, and they're probably doing this for hundreds of people.
That's what I'm saying. So then there's a few Zooms.
Yeah.
Meet them in person a couple times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, what's my favorite day? Now, then you do a medical. So then they tell you to do a medical and you're like, all right. But they're never telling you. The whole time, they're never telling you, like, you're going on. They always say to you, you might do everything. You might fly out there, but you might not go on.
So even when they say you're flying out there, you're not guaranteed to be in the program.
Some people fly out to Love Island and then fly back.
Do they?
Yeah, it's mad.
So they fly out more people than actually appear on the TV program. Why do they do that?
Because in case, like, to match the storyline on the TV, because you know what I'm saying? Like, for example, if I'm with this girl, we have an argument today, and they think it's sick to throw in a bombshell tomorrow.
Wow.
Do you know what I'm saying? So they just have to keep people on standby, like, there to just go in ready. But do you know what's mad? Even though they said to me, this might sound arrogant, but I don't care.
He's gonna say it anyway.
Even though they said to me, like, you might not go on, I was just thinking, I'm going on though. Like, there was not a part doubt in my mind.
You had that self-belief.
That I just had it, like, because who else? I just thought, who else are you going to find?
Yeah.
That's what I generally thought at that time. And I was just like, yeah, well, okay. Just whatever.
So when you went in, what was your reaction when you knew you were going in? Were you sort of anxious, nervous, excited? What were your emotions going into the...
Do you know what?
When into Love Island.
So what? When I flew there or when I walked
in? When you actually walked in.
out into the villa.
Yeah, and you're in.
Bro,
you know,
I was shitting myself. Well, yeah. That was a madness. That feeling, I've
because you knew how big... You were in quite recently. You weren't in season one. So you knew the magnitude of that show at that point.
That's what I'm saying. It was when I walked out, I was like, oh my God, like my heart was pounding.
Was it?
Feeling sweaty. And I'd never get nervous.
More nervous than playing football?
Way more nervous.
Really?
Way more nervous. Ben Weatherstone doing anything I've ever done. My GCSEs.
Yeah.
Anything. Driving tests. I was nervous.
I remember
thinking, don't look like an idiot. Don't trip. You're on TV.
Oh, little things
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
So then I walked out. And then I literally walked out, looked at everyone's face, genuinely. Just felt calm. From there.
Did you?
From there. Smooth sailing.
Really?
Not nervous. Forgot the cameras were there. Just was myself from the jump.
Tell me what it's like. Are there cameras I'm intrigued to know what really goes on in Love Island. Are there cameras everywhere? I mean, like, are there cameras in the toilet?
Yeah, cameras in the toilet. So, like, sometimes when you're just on a toilet, I'm looking up and seeing a camera. So if you need I gave a little wave and
you
that.
Need to do a number two.
Yeah, that's looking at you, I used to wave at that sometimes.
While you're on the toilet?
Yeah.
Is that not a bit weird?
Yeah, it is a bit weird. When you think about it, it is weird.
Do you go to toilets now and just check this back out?
It's mad when you think about it. Love Island, the whole Love Island thing's actually crazy. It's mad. Like you don't have your phone. Never know the time.
Do you never? Is that genuine? Genuinely,
never touch your
How
phone.
How difficult is that then? From your parents, not knowing the football score, for instance, not knowing what's going on in the outside world.
Yeah, it's mad. The family things are right because I feel like if something was really significant happened, they'd tell you.
Right.
So as long as you go through and no one's really saying anything, it's like they're right. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
But footy,
but the football, that's a whole different story.
That's a different level of stress.
Different level
Dad,
of stress.
I'm not going to miss you. But
you don't know who's win. You don't know the results, and then but the worst thing is
that's
when
mad, isn't it? In this day and age, because you can get everything like that. On your phone.
And I love my phone. So I'm always on my phone. Same. So, bro, when I was in there, I was like just itching. And people always say, "What happens in Love Island? What actually happens in Love Island?" Yeah. Bro, a whole lot of nothing, bro.
Really,
it's boring.
But that is genuine. You don't have your phone anywhere near.
Nothing. You sit there,
and that's hard.
It's so hard because I'm someone that just needs to do stuff, and I'll just you do anything to entertain yourself. Like, me and the boys were just playing silly games. Like we used to make up games like. The word game where I say a word, you say a word, and the sentence will be just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're doing it for 3 hours at a time. Yeah. Like, it's just mental. And I remember I used to get buzzing when a boy bombshell will come in that looks like he likes football. So I'll be like, yo, who did Arsenal sign?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was like, yo, they signed Havertz, they signed Rice. And I was like, Havertz? I was like, what are they signing Havertz for? And then I'll go back and forth with the guy. Like, literally. And then
so that's the first thing you'd say when someone else came in,
who Arsenal signed?
Because you're an Arsenal
and
fan.
And then literally, but you have to say it quick because then the gallery will be like, Ty, start asking questions about the outside.
Really?
Like, Tyreek Beechot won. Like, and I'm like, who did Arsenal sign? Who did Arsenal sign? Quickly tell me. And then they'll say it. And then
so
and then
the only info you wanted from the outside world was who did Arsenal sign?
Who did Arsenal sign? What music's out?
Yeah.
Who released the album on that? What was Drake and Jay Huss's song sounding like? What was Central C and Dave's song sounding like? Sprinter. I missed it.
And Declan Rice deal as well.
Declan Rice. Wow. Arsenal. What else are you stop thinking? What else are you ask? What's my followers on? Like, right. you know, just ask questions about what's going on outside. Who does everyone like? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, how am I coming across? Am I coming across as a prick?
Yeah, was that the most challenging part then? Not knowing what's going on in the outside?
Yeah,
not
that was the most challenging part about it. But even that wasn't even that challenging because I think it literally, Love Island just gets you in a place where all you know is, there was a point in there, genuinely, where all I knew was that villa and the people in it. Like, I didn't think about my mum. I realised I didn't think about my mum, my sister, my dad, my brother for about 4 days. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is mental.
Why is that? Because you just get in a bubble?
You're just in a mad bubble, bro. I was in there from day one till the end.
Yeah.
So I'm just seeing people come, go.
You got to the final, didn't you?
Yeah, I got to the final.
Do you think you should have won it?
I think 100% should have won that show.
Yeah?
Yeah, 100.
Why do you think you didn't?
Well, I don't think I didn't.
Tough question, that, isn't it?
That is a hard question. I know why I didn't do it, but I'm not going to say it. I know why I didn't think I did, but I'm not going to say why I didn't.
But you thought you should have done.
But I should have done, yeah.
Yeah. And be honest with this one. When you go in, obviously it's a reality show. Obviously people are looking for love. People are trying to win a game. There's money at stake. What is your motivation going in? Is it simply to win the reality program? Is it the cash? Or do you genuinely want to find love when you went in there?
Do you know what? My plan, genuinely, I had no plan. My plan was to go in there, A, make sure I'm myself. Because I'll be honest, even my mum said, don't be yourself when you go on that show.
Why did she say that?
Because she knows how I am. Like, I have, obviously, I'm perfect. I've got some bad traits. You know what I'm saying?
So that, you said that a few times now, just to pick you up on that.
Yeah.
You were really worried about how the outside world would see you.
And I wanted to make sure that if they was going to see me for anything, or be me.
And that's what your mum said as well.
And my mum said, don't. Like, play a bit of a game. Like, be something. You're not a little bit. And I was like, no. Like, I'm not doing it.
Because you've seen it go the other way.
And then I remember my mum just, that's what my mum, every day, I swear, my brother tells me my mum was on edge every single night. Like, panicking. To the point where, like, it's proper bad.
Yeah.
So then, that was my aim. Go on there. Let everyone, the whole world see me for me. Mm. If I go home first week, I was myself. If I win the show, I was myself. Mm. I didn't care about winning the show, genuinely.
Didn't you?
I only started caring when I thought I should have won it.
Yeah, yeah. The nearer you get, the closer it's like dangling a carrot.
Didn't give a toss about finding love. If I'm being
honest.
Didn't think I would. I didn't think it was possible. I've never been in love before, and definitely didn't think I was gonna do it on ITV and 9 p.m. every night. So, and what else did I think? And that was it.
So your main motivation was just to be yourself,
and I want
to network and grow, network,
and hopefully come out, get paid to be myself, doing something. Yeah. I don't know what yet. Generally, that was it.
Wow.
I didn't know what I wanted to do when I come out.
That's very honest, mate.
Yeah,
fair
that's
play.
Generally. Didn't have no plan. But if I told anyone that's going on Love Island now, any advice is make sure you have it before. If you're going on Love Island now, have what you want to do after so you can go straight into it.
Really?
Because where I kind of didn't really, I'm doing well, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Luckily and thankfully, but I think that's generally them because I was different.
So have a plan before you
have
go
a plan
in.
Before you go in.
Is like, that hard?
What you want to do?
Is that hard? Because obviously Love Island's massive, but it's every year. So do you feel like coming out of Love Island, you have to hit the ground running for that year before you become, I don't want to use the word relevant, it's
old watches.
But you do almost become less relevant the following year when there's another load of people that go in.
Yeah, of course. A lot of people keep saying that thing to me, but you know what? I'm buzzing for the new Love Island to start, so everyone can just leave me alone.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest with you, like, they can message someone else and find someone else to obsess over. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And I know what you mean.
Like, so they can just get off me for a bit. And in terms of relevance, I feel like I keep saying, it might sound a bit arrogant, but I just think I'm just telling the truth. Like,
yeah,
I was genuinely different and I don't think they're going to find someone like me this year because they ain't going to. Do you know what I'm
really?
Like, I just don't think they can.
Because you think a lot of people go in there and play a game and are very different.
I think a lot of people go in there and do you know what it is? I feel like a lot of people go in there and we've seen them before.
Right, okay.
I feel like there's a lot of copy paste.
Similar people.
Yeah, there hasn't been anyone like me on the show. And I think a lot of people would agree out there. Do you know what I mean? So I was the first of my kind. So if someone was even somewhat like me this year, they'll say, oh, he's just trying to be like Tyree. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
whereas a lot of people were like, oh, he's just been trying to be like him from season three or season four. Do you know what I'm saying?
Seen someone win and think if they copy those traits, I might have a chance of
winning.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying? But I just literally didn't care. I didn't care how, and do you know what's mad? When I come out of Love Island, I struggled with the amount of love I got because I always I deal with hate better than love.
Do you?
So I always thought people were going to hate me. I thought people were going to hate me and I'll come out and it's like, shut up. But I come out and got so much love, like overwhelming love to the point where it's like, I didn't really know how to navigate or do with it. Like it was a weird one. And obviously I'm blessed and grateful that I have so much love out there. And shout out everyone that does support me and stuff. But that's something I really struggled with. Like receiving love, like public love.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You said you didn't go in there looking for love.
Yeah.
You coupled up with Ella. Did you find love when you were in there, would you say?
Yeah, no, I found love.
Did you?
100% I found love. And it was mad, bro. Like, I can't even explain. You know.
So genuinely you two in love?
Genuinely in love. Yeah. That's why I think we should have won that show because I genuinely think we was the most in love.
Mm.
And I reckon a lot of people in that villa would agree. But let me just leave it as that.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
And I'm not going to go on about it, but you're not together now.
No,
right?
Not together, no.
No, but still amicable and everything like
amicable,
that.
Amicable, yeah, still on good terms. Nothing but respect for her. Wish her nothing but the best. She's a good girl. Nothing happened. So, nothing major happened between us. I feel like it just, you know, obviously when you come out of Love Island and it's a whole new lifestyle. Do you know what I mean? For both of us, it's a
is
whole.
Is that hard to deal with?
Yeah, it's massively hard because, like I said, I was working at a special needs school, playing semi-pro football.
Mm.
Coming out, now I'm doing nothing I was doing before. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not even playing football anymore.
Yeah.
So everything I knew is kind of been flipped upside down. And it's kind of, and sometimes I find it hard sometimes because I feel like what am I actually doing here? Like, I find it hard to get a bit, not motivated, but like to stay focused really.
Is it?
So, yeah.
Is it hard getting that big so quickly as well? Because obviously going into Love Island, you go in and then you come out and it's millions of followers. It's everywhere. It's not like building it up gradually. It's like, I look at my career, and I'm nowhere near the level you're at in terms of followers, but I was a runner, then worked in editing, then producing, then got my presenter's contracts. Yeah. And it's like, although it was a slow grind, it's like you almost appreciate that because you've worked your way up. And I always think people that win X Factor or go on Love Island, it must be so hard to deal with And I can't even relate to your level of fame, but almost overnight. And you haven't had your phone to even see that happen. So are those moments afterwards actually quite challenging, but rewarding at the same time?
Yeah, massively challenging. Don't get me wrong. Like, obviously, like you just said, the things you do now, yeah, and you're doing amazing, you've worked for that and gone through that. So when people are saying, oh, Smithy, like, what's happening, bro? You get that sense of, yeah, like, I've worked for this.
Yeah.
When I go out and it's like, happening to her, like, can I get a picture? I'm like, what do you even want a picture from me for? I didn't even do anything. That's how I genuinely feel. And I think, why would you want a picture of me?
Yeah.
Like, that's why I can't wait to drop music. Because then ask me for a picture. Because then I feel like I've done something. I feel like my talent earned me this. Yeah. Not you just like my face and you like me, you see him on TV every day. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It kind of like, I find it hard to deal with that so many people just want to watch me. Or like, when I make TikToks, how many views I get. Like, why do you want to watch me? I'm talented. But you don't know me for my talent.
Right.
That's how I feel. Like, so I don't feel rewarding. It really doesn't feel rewarding when people ask me for pics and stuff. And I've never said no to any single person that's asked for a pic. Like, I give a pic every single time when I'm eating. No matter what, where I am, I'll always be polite and respectful because I know that generally some people like are generally supporting me. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. And when they support me for me, but it just generally baffles me. Like, why do you want a picture?
That's interesting that.
Like, I generally don't.
But that's the world we live in. I think it's, you know, everyone, you see people on the TV and stuff or socials and they want to be a part of that and want that first.
Like, for example, if I saw like Kevin De Bruyne, he's a joke at football. That's why you want a picture of him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You want a picture of, why? Like, think about why do you want, why?
Yeah.
Because I look good. Like, girls might ask for a picture because they think I'm handsome.
Yeah.
But that's not even enough for me, bro. Like, I want to generally feel rewarded.
That's interesting. Yeah,
that's how I feel.
Is there anything else that would happen that we wouldn't see, like when the cameras are, like what happens when the cameras aren't rolling? Like, just talk to us about what that experience is like and what actually goes on.
Love Island, like I said, a whole lot of nothing. So you're seeing there's 24. The cameras are on all day.
How many cameras are there? Would you say?
Bro, I think one time we tried to count them, but you can't count them. So there's like there's little ones hiding.
So
everywhere.
I was going to say that they're hidden ones, aren't they? There's rather than camera operators in your face to capture the authenticity.
There's a big camera that comes out, and when the big camera comes out, you know someone's going home or something big's happening. Do you know what I'm saying? So I might see it to the boys like, yo, the big camera's out. Someone pack their bags. Like, get me back now. What else happens? There's off days, obviously. But do you know what's
what happens on an off day? What's an off day?
Do you know what's mad about off days? Like, so example, it's not even off days. It's like off nights. It's weird. So like you'll wake up on like a Sunday or a Saturday, depending on what they decide, the producers. So then you'll wake up, get ready for the day. They'll say, have your conversations and that. So you have your conversations, whatnot. And then the producers will come in and say, cut, like, not cut, but like, everyone chill, boys over there, girls over there, and we'll eat. Yeah. Then whilst we're eating, the producers will say, it's an off night tonight. Yeah. Which then means that this is not getting filmed. So you can do whatever, like you can go bed now. Like you can sleep, because you can't just sleep on a normal, you can't go for a nap.
You can't go for a nap on a normal day.
Like,
why
not? Get out. They'll be like, get out, this is not holiday. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, because you need to
get footage. You know what I'm saying? Like need to get, you need to get the footage 24/7, like, because you might nap and someone wants to chat to you. Do you know what I'm saying? But then often that they might say you can go to sleep and they order McDonald's or burger or pizza or so anything.
So an off day, cameras are off.
Cameras are off, chilling. Like, you get me, you're chilling. You can put your, you know, you can just lay down with the boys outside, kick a ball for a bit sometimes, they let us do, which was actually unreal. And then, but then what they do is they say, stop, after you finish eating, they say, everyone line up, not line up, but everyone come to me one by one and they take a picture on their phone of exactly how your hair is, exactly what you're wearing. So then when the next morning comes, they blend it so it looks like it's the same day. That's one.
So you'll have a conversation with someone, same outfit, you're wearing your green, your white and your blue jeans, whatever, same shoes that morning. Off night, go to bed the next day.
You have to put the exact
same. Sit in the same place, same lighting.
Down to the point, if I had these earrings in yesterday morning, I got to wear these earrings.
So some conversations we watch will be like an amalgamation of 2 days conversation.
Yes, that's what a lot of people don't know. I don't think no one said that either. But that's something not everyone knows.
I love that.
And just blend it in.
So you
it's actually mad. The editors are sick.
That is mad. Yeah. Yeah. Look, and you see from the credits how many people work on that. That's probably because you said all the cameras.
And they're all lovely, by the way. All the people, like the cameramen and that, like working on sick guys. Like, yeah, I love Love Island. I love the staff at Love Island, even the villa runners, producers. I actually like everyone there, really.
Did you?
When I think about it now, when I was there, I used to moan. They'll tell you I used to moan a lot. Yeah. Like, oh, I want to go home. Like, this is long. You're telling me what to do all the time. But now I think about it, like, what a summer.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, what a summer, bro. Yeah. Like, wake up, I ain't got to pay nothing. I ain't spending no money. I ain't got to pay for food. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just chilling in the sun, talking to girls and chatting to a couple of the guys. Do you know what I'm saying? It is sick, bro.
It's not bad.
It's sick.
And since then, you've come out, and obviously, as we know, you've got millions of followers. Mm. So what are you doing now? I see you doing a bit of content with Premier League. I see in music, football. So go on, tell us what's next for you.
For me, basically, I feel like for me, it was very important for me to really do stuff that I'm really passionate about. Mm. Otherwise, it could come across in my content as, you can tell I'm someone that I'm kind of easy to read, you know what I'm saying? So if it seems fake and that, you'll be able to tell that it's fake from my content. But if I'm really passionate about it, you can tell that I'm putting my thoughts into it, effort into it. So my two biggest passions is obviously music and football, which I love to death, basically, really. And obviously I've been working with the Premier League and the football stuff.
That's a bit of content creation.
Content creation for the Premier League. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully getting into some hosting sides for it.
Class,
yeah, man. So like, hopefully doing a bit of, you know, back and forth banter with the players and stuff like that, which I think I'll be decent at.
Yeah.
And obviously music, like I said, I'm making my own music.
Yeah, single. Tell us about your track that's coming out.
Yeah, the track's called Pain Hub, which basically is about pain, really, about my life story, about how I felt at one point in my life. It's not my life story, how I felt at one point in my life. And I really thought it was important to highlight that and do it in a cool way, because I don't feel like a lot of people speak about mental health, but I feel like with my platform and my followers and stuff like that, I can really do it in a way that resonates with people like me. So you can do it like that, you know what I'm saying? It can still be cool. Yeah. I still go through it.
That's amazing though, all that you've been through, because you, again, people might wrongly assume that you'd make a music video about the fact that you've been a footballer, being in Love Island around girls, but you're actually using your platform to make a video about depression and mental health in a new way because of all that you've been through in your life, which is
Get me wrong.
It's still powerful, isn't it?
It is. That's what I'm saying. It's still got elements of being a footballer and living the life now. And so it's all a bit of a blend, isn't it? It's just a blend of me, and it's a story that
still
I put together.
It's on Man Bag in the music.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? basically.
Love that.
Yeah, I put a little blend in that. And there'll be more songs coming. Like, I'm really passionate about music. Like, I'm not doing it with a label. I'm going 100% independent. Mm. I'm putting my money into this.
Yeah.
My effort, my time into this. You know, they probably see me on my snap. I'm in a studio like 4 or 5 times a week, nights. Going crazy, going hard.
Love it.
So yeah, I'm passionate about that, and I'm going for it. And football, and hosting, really. Hopefully, like content creation and stuff like that. And obviously, the YouTube, I've got the vlogs and stuff. So yeah,
it's interesting you said that you want people to ask for a photo for you because of recognizing your talent. So you want that to be a journey, whether that's presenting, playing football, or music.
Literally.
But that sounds like that's so important to you, not just to be recognized for the guy from Love Island, but actually pursuing those projects. You haven't spoken about your Arsenal as well. A little while gone since the end of the season. Have you gotten over the way that ended? Because it did look at one point like it was going to be Arsenal's title, didn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I feel like when it went down to the last day, I just knew City was going to do the job.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
City was going to do the job, do you know what I mean? But I feel like what really hurt is that I actually went to Spurs versus City.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to the Spurs stadium.
So you went to the Spurs game to support Tottenham?
To support Tottenham.
As an Arsenal fan?
As an Arsenal fan.
So how did you react when Sonny's one-on-one?
Yeah, bro, if I talk, I'm in big trouble. You know what I'm saying?
Nah, I was cutting. Jose then.
I was fuming, obviously. I've seen him score that goal. That's what I'm saying.
As a Spurs fan, I saw that so many times.
I thought it was in. I thought, done. Like, yeah. I was like, yes. And then when he's, I was like, oh, is he kidding me? Like, winding me up and that.
Wow, in the Spurs then.
So you support Spurs though, innit?
Yeah, I'm Spurs,
Some Spurs fans are pathetic though.
You're not having
are you one of the prophetic ones?
I wasn't the one doing the Poznan at the ground. I thought that was a bit too far. Yeah. But I can get Spurs fans not wanting Arsenal to win the league. Yeah. It was a weird one. But how about
just try and win the league yourselves? No,
I think we will. Yeah, I think we will at some point. Mate, I think it's been absolutely brilliant. Mm. We always end this by asking the same question. Just advice for people that are listening to this that might want to either follow in your footsteps, that might be looking to go to the music industry or football industry. Just wonder what advice you'd have for people that might be watching.
One bit of advice I always live by is, just don't really care too much what people think, man. Because at the end of the day, life's short and life ain't real. Look, I used to play football, used to work out of school, went on Love Island. Now I'm doing music. You can literally do what you want and don't let no one tell you you can't, really, at the end of the day, because the world's yours.
Great advice. I love that line, the world's yours. Yeah. I love that. And mate, I think it's been brilliant. Thank you for being so honest and open about talking about the highs, but also the lows. I think it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you very much for coming on. Love that.
Thank you for having me, man.